we want better performances, we want more attack. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing to be shouting out. It made me really proud to be a Munster man.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
Yeah, you're welcome along. It's OTB AM, and have we a special for you today? There's no Republic of Ireland manager whatsoever in the four divisions across England. So we have Nathan Murphy in to pick his team of the half season so far. Forget about Tuchel and Rangnick all over the papers of late. It's all about Murphy this morning on OTB AM, brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. We've actually loads to get through on the show today, including two LOI starlets who are off to the SPL. This is kind of an extension of, I guess, what myself and Rory O'Connor were talking about on yesterday's show. This massive influx of players from Ireland going over to Scotland. That's just part of the show today. There's only one place to start. Manager Murphy, how are you?
Well, I really wasn't sure where you were going with that introduction. Well, there's a shock. Happy New Year to you and to all the viewers, Johnny.
What's going on?
Are we still saying that? Not a lot. Not a lot is going on with anybody at the moment, is it? It's all a little bit dead and a little bit dull at the moment. I'm sort of looking back at the Christmas going, where did it go? Never got the trip down home. Never got the few pints and Stephen's Night and Gareth Delaney's and Ballyhaunas. Never had that sort of 2 a.m. bleary-eyed nostalgia with all the lads you went to school with, all that sort of nonsense. So yeah, it's just sort of we're back at work, aren't we? And it's like, wow, where'd that go?
Well, how was your Christmas then with the kids and so forth? I know, I believe they got the Shamrock Rovers season tickets among their Christmas stocking.
Wow, Santa was good this year, wasn't he? Yeah, many Premier League jerseys and Shamrock Rovers season tickets. So yeah, I don't know how I feel about this because obviously they got Shamrock Rovers season tickets. So I also had to get a Shamrock Rovers season ticket because it turns out you can't just send a 9-year-old and 8-year-old off to Tala by themselves on the loose and say, best of luck there, lads. It feels like becoming a bit of a dub. So you got a season ticket for a team. I'm not sure how I feel about that. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm already sort of sweating about the restrictions and the end of February and the first home game, and the lads are looking at the fixture list and they're buzzing about what games they can go to. They're wondering, can they go to away games? Do we get to go to the Champions League games? And you're sort of hoping that the restrictions mean they can just even go to the league games when the season gets underway. But yeah, I've been going for the last sort of 3 or 4 years, easing them in gently, and they absolutely love it. And I think it was capped on the final day of the season when Rovers got the title, and it was just such a brilliant atmosphere out there, and there was thousands of kids out on the pitch afterwards, and they get to meet all the players, and it sort of gives them that connection that they're just now desperate to go back. And rather than 3-4 years ago just going because they wanted the bottle of Fanta at halftime, now they know the players and they're excited about the players and they know some of the songs and they know the chants. And yeah, I'd encourage, it's funny, I was out yesterday for a walk with a friend of mine who lives sort of just past Tala and is a kid the same age, and was telling him I should bring him along to Rovers. He's going, is it not a bit rough around the League of Ireland matches? And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, oh, you know, so all that stuff around the cup final, you know, which is the sort of place to be bringing a kid. And I was like, what? And I was frustrated at the time with the conversation that followed around the cup final. But when you're sort of in the bubble of going to matches and being around football a lot, you sort of presume nobody listens to it. And you sort of assume that people realize it is a one-off, that you can go to 99.9% of League of Ireland games and there's never any trouble. That, yeah, there's an atmosphere. And, you know, actually, the best games at Rovers in the last couple of years have been the matches against Bowes and Dundalk, where, you know, there is a bit of an atmosphere, actually. It is a little bit raw because, yeah, there's no, you don't want trouble, you don't want any scraps, you don't
I
want
any I think kids only
dangerous.
Love that.
But actually, where everyone, you know, one of the things all the kids love, I find, is like everyone cursing. Like, their eyes light up when they're in a match and somebody's cursing behind them. It's like, wow, I'm out in the open. But actually, my mate's from Scotland, and so wouldn't be fully au fait with everything that's going on in the League of Ireland, and is a Rangers fan, so would be well used to, you know, Old Firm, that he is telling me he's not quite sure about going to a League of Ireland game because he heard there might be a little bit of trouble. I was a little bit shocked, so I obviously set him straight and said, actually, I think Tala right now, particularly with the facilities that are there, you got to be bringing them.
Yeah, and I think kids were probably better off going to League of Ireland games than being on their phones as well. I mean, you know, they might hear a bit of cursing and swearing, but like, it's live football. It's doing stuff with your dad in this case as well. Just on that, Nathan, you mentioned the restrictions. I mean, at the moment, I suppose, worst case scenario for the League of Ireland right now would be 5,000 a cap at the games, which kind of be fine. But Ciara Kelly...
Well, it's half capacity.
Yeah. Like, well, if...
So
if
it depends on the size of the stadium. So most places, I assume, and from chatting to a couple of people... will be fine for season ticket holders.
Mm.
But the problem is, from a club's point of view, they have no revenue coming in at all on the day if it's just limited to season ticket holders.
But is this not completely bonkers? So Ciara Kelly was on yesterday just talking about the figures and her perspective on it, which I think is worth listening to. You'll find it on the channels or whatever. But like, this is frustrating for League of Ireland clubs because obviously, you know, and frustrating for everyone, but they need some sort of security as well. And we're talking about small figures in outdoor venues going to games. As you mentioned, they have no revenue streams at the moment.
Well, this is going to become a huge talking point over the next couple of weeks because we're less than a month away from the start of the Six Nations, and there's stories in the papers this morning about Six Nations chiefs want the matches to go ahead even behind closed doors. And I think that'd be hugely damaging for the IRFU, who need the revenue of a full Aviva Stadium. But obviously, there's a massive television deal around that the Six Nations organising body need this to go ahead to protect the television deal.
Mm.
The problem for the League of Ireland, as we know, is one of the few major sports that they don't have any real television deal. They're not, the games going ahead with a reduced crowd are just season ticket holders, where, remember, for season ticket holders, the money's already in. So you've got your cash now. You're not getting another 2,000 people walking up on the night, and you're missing out on all that, and you're not getting any extra revenue because the games are on television. So it would be enormously damaging for the League of Ireland if it was to go ahead with any sort of restrictions. But it's going to be enormously damaging for, I think, all the different governing bodies and all the different sports if these restrictions are still in place. The League of Ireland still has a couple of months, and if the trends of Omicron follow what it's been in South Africa and what it's been in other countries, we'll hit the peak quite soon. And hopefully it's a fairly steep decline afterwards. And by the end of February, we're back in position. But the current restrictions are in place still a couple of days before the Six Nations start. So
That
Wales game has to be in real doubt in terms of having 51,000 people there. But you would have to hope by the end of February that outdoor sports stadiums are allowed to have a full capacity. We're in a pretty bad place if they're not.
We are. And like, just from the League of Ireland perspective, you're talking about obviously small crowds, but I think as much as the FAI has been beholden to government, we do need some voices on this. Where is the evidence at all that League of Ireland games, for example, are super spreaders or anything like that? And if you're telling a fellow who's triple vaccinated that he can't do one thing that he enjoys every weekend, going to see Galway United or going to see Cork City or whatever, he's done everything, and now you're saying he can't go in because, you know, it's full or there's a reduced capacity. I'm getting very riled, and it's only 7:37, Nathan. I think it's time to go to...
The conversation hasn't changed around that, though. I think... Experts will tell you that it's not about the match itself.
The gathering,
The gathering and the public transport. But again,
how about trusting people, though, to actually behave themselves? You know, how about trusting people, you know?
Well, I think you can trust people to behave themselves. And I don't think anyone is misbehaving when it comes to this. Nobody is trying to congregate. But you would have this bizarre situation where, say, a Shamrock Rovers are playing Bohemians at 8 o'clock, and you can be across the road in the hotel having a drink in a crowded hotel until 8 o'clock, but then actually you can't go to the match afterwards, and you also have to get out of the hotel because that's going to shut at 8 o'clock as well. Like, these are the things that I think are really starting to frustrate people and piss people off now, those sort of conflicts. But I don't think League of Ireland is going to be anywhere near the top of the consideration when they're thinking about allowing supporters back into stadiums, unfortunately.
Yeah, you mentioned it. You mentioned the pub in Ballyhaunas. Breslin's pub in Ballygar closed earlier this week because of the COVID restrictions, and we need to think of people like that. Like, Breslin's came into Ballygar, they basically set up a restaurant in a town that badly needed it and a pub that was needed as well, and everyone loved them, and they had to go because of COVID, and there are lots of examples of that in rural Ireland. So let's not forget as well that a lot of people have suffered in rural Ireland, in places that, you know, COVID barely even existed, actually, in some cases. Anyway, enough.
Did you have a disco in Ballygar, Johnny?
No, that was Montbellu. It was Barrett's. Yeah, that was the place to be, as it were, back in the day. You'd obviously try to get in and put on your best looking 18 or more look, which took me till I was about 25, I think. But they were the days. I mean, the Sound of Music in Glenamaddy before that, where my parents met. I'm sure your father, Micheál, is listening in with knowing ears and knowing eyes.
I probably played there all right. Yeah, I think we used to go to the... there was certain discos where if you're from Ballyhonish, you weren't advised to go to. I thought that maybe the one around Mount Bellew, Ballygar, was the one that we were told, avoid. You wouldn't be welcome. The locals. The locals, yeah. Johnny.
There was always Rockford's in Roscommon as well, which is a controversial place to go around.
You never made your way to Midas, no?
No. The Midas touch, eh? There we go. Just going to leave it, right? Coming up on the show today. PL team so far, which is actually now, so that's Nathan's team. We're going to get to that very shortly. Ross Tierney and Dan Cleary, two of the League of Ireland starlets, off to the SPL. I'm looking forward to that chat because I think that's been a bit of a trend. Will O'Callaghan will talk sport at 8:30. Colin Buhig, 8:45, is going to talk about the very controversial Djokovic exemption for the Aussie Open. Have to say, I'm a bit like you listening in to this, if you haven't sort of much background to it, but it does sound a little bit like one rule for the rich, one rule for the poor. We'll see what Colin has to say about that. Daniel Davies, nutritionist. Obviously, we had Jessica Barr on yesterday about... kind of running, I guess, throughout the month of February and making your New Year's resolution that. So anyway, after Jessica came on, I went into the cab home and the cab driver was telling me 62 years of age. He gave up the drink at 29 and he became essentially a bit of a running addict. He still runs several times a week at 62. It was one of the most uplifting taxi journeys certainly I've had. Not sure about him, but he was telling me all of this and I was telling him about Jessica and he said running for his mind has been unbelievable. And in conjunction with that, if you are on dry January or you are doing whatever it is, food is very important. And Daniel Davey will talk nutrition. The meals that you should have or shouldn't have in your week, that's coming up at 9:10. And then we'll hear about Andy Mitten, of course, 9:30, Nathan, just talking about Man United, which is literally the gift that just keeps on giving. Like, how long is this now? Since, it must be nearly since Fergie left. It's been every single day we've been talking about Man United. Lots of stuff in the papers, which we will get to today, about so-called ructions in the dressing room and all that, which is obviously rather evinced in the performance the other night against Wolves when they were pathetic.
Oh, last night was as bad as anything we've seen from Manchester United. Remember, this is a Wolves team who are maybe
it's
one of the
two
duller...
Nights ago. You're struggling with the dates as much as me.
Two nights ago. Mm-hmm. If it's not the... Like, Wolves might be the dullest team in the Premier League. And I don't mean that as a massive insult that it sounds, but they're very defensive-minded. They don't play this swashbuckling brand of football. And then you watch them against Manchester United, and that's exactly what they're allowed to do. And while it was only 1-0, like, this was as bad as anything that we saw under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And the papers today, I think, sum up the problem at the heart of Manchester United. It's leak after leak after leak, bitching and moaning to the media, getting your side the story out. The dressing room is unhappy. Edinson Cavani and Mason Greenwood are unhappy that certain players are assured of their position. Like, sort this out in the dressing room. But every second day there are stories about the Manchester United dressing room and certain players are unhappy. And also, there's very few players in that Manchester United squad at the moment you can look at and really listen to their concerns and care about their concerns, because none of them are delivering. Like, Mason Greenwood, for all the talent, is he the first name of the team sheet right now? Has he done enough to say, you know what, I'm the best 19, 20 year old in world football right now, you have to pick me every week? No, he flatters the sieve every second match. Marcus Rashford's form has been bordering on a disgrace all season, typified by that pass towards the end last night. Mm. Ronaldo, I know you touched on it yesterday, clearly hasn't made the impact he wanted. And very quickly, there's questions coming in around Ralf Rangnick and, you know, his maybe lack of experience at a club the size of Manchester United, dealing with players of the size of the ones that are inside that dressing room, and can he deal with it? And it feels as though the conversation around should he stay on past the end of the season has gone very, very quiet.
We'll have Coach Murphy very shortly. He's half team of the season, and we'll also talk a little bit about Kieran Trippier's return to England. But if you were the Man United manager, Coach Murphy needs to be ruthless. What does he do right now? Does he kind of almost like look to what am I going to do ahead of next season? What can I do to patch up things ahead of the start of next season? Does he sacrifice some big names? Does he change the system, which seems to be a bit stilted at times? What would you do?
I don't think you can think about next season and think about planning for next season. Like, this is Manchester United. You have to qualify for the Champions League. And I always go back to an article Rory Smith wrote a few years ago about when the best players in Europe are looking for a club to sign. You know, guaranteed Champions League football is one of them. And at Manchester United, you just can't get that. And we're looking at what's potentially going to be one of the busiest summers in the history of football in terms of money spent. If Mbappe goes, if Haaland goes, if Declan Rice goes, and there are three, well, certainly two in Haaland and Rice that Manchester United should be interested in and should be in the market in. And if you're not in the Champions League, It's hard to see how you get either of those. The big question is still, what do you do with Ronaldo? And you could spend all day trying to figure out, should you drop him? Should you drop him? Is it possible to implement the style of play that Ralf Rangnick wants with Cristiano Ronaldo in the side? Can you press high with Ronaldo in the side? I think at this stage, he's got to give it a go. Because while when he came in first, it was a feeling, well, you can get the other nine outfield players to press and be intense and let Ronaldo do his thing and chase around a little bit and cover the gaps and he'll score you the goals. It'll be fine. That hasn't worked. So go with Mason Greenwood through the middle, where he was excellent at times last season, and give him a run of games there. Put Bruno Fernandes back in. See if Ronaldo's absence sparks something in Fernandes, who I think for a year at this stage has been, you know, out of form. Yes. There's been moments in matches. Clearly, there've been moments in matches, and you know, I was delighted to see Gary Neville call it out, that sort of whinge bag line, because even that night at the Aviva against Ireland, we saw it. Hey, taking off early, walking around, giving out to the referee, bitching and moaning constantly. Like, that's not what you need from a Bruno Fernandes. He's meant to be a leader. He's meant to be someone trying to inspire the players. But he has that permanent look of just disdain at his teammates, who he feels aren't on his level, which is fine maybe when you're doing it week in, week out, as he did for his first year at the club. But the last year just hasn't happened. So I think he needs to figure out a way of getting Bruno Fernandes back involved, motivated. And then do you go and try and sign somebody for 20, 25 million over the next month who can fit your system, who has a bit of energy, who can fit the style of play you want? I don't know. Even Scott McTominay, who gets a very hard time in some ways for Manchester United fans, his lack of discipline just seems to sum up United at the moment. The amount of fouls they give away, silly, loose legs here and there. Throughout that team, there are massive issues. So I think it's an enormous job that is getting bigger by the day when you look at the headlines that are in the papers today, because the players clearly don't seem to think it's on them. They seem to constantly be looking around that dressing room at somebody else, that this is on you, it's not on me. So I to be quite honest, I don't know what the solution for Ralf Rangnick is. And maybe a dropping of Cristiano Ronaldo sets out a message, and maybe it sparks an upturn in results. And suddenly, you know, you've got a bit of authority because you've dropped Ronaldo, you're getting results. But looking at the rest of the Manchester United squad and the form that's there, I'm not sure what 11 puts Manchester United on a 6-7 game winning streak at the moment.
Kieran Trippier going to join Newcastle. He's 31, I think 12 million or so, one of the first big signings, obviously, from how in relation to their quest to stay up. 19 games gone, 11 points. You'd have to say that, you know, you'd imagine Newcastle should be able to pull out. It looks kind of looks a four-horse race down there, doesn't it, for the bottom three?
It does, but I think with the Premier League at the moment, almost every team has two or three real quality players who you could see going on a run and doing enough for them to get them out of trouble. And likewise, you wouldn't be surprised if there's a team that suddenly loses 5-6 games in a row and finds themselves dragged back in a Southampton or Brentford, and suddenly you're right back in that relegation zone. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens at Newcastle over the next month. So Kieran Trippier looks a really impressive signing. Looking at all the, reading the Spanish journalists, can't really understand why Atletico are letting him go. You know, it's been exceptional again this season. There's been a huge success since he went to Spain. There's always a little bit of out of sight, out of mind, but by all accounts is still one of the best right backs around. So it's a good marker for Newcastle to start with, but it does seem that what they thought they might get in January isn't going to happen, because through COVID and through the fact that the other clubs are worried about them, the top six want to see them relegated. It would suit them down to the ground if Newcastle relegated and aren't going to give them their players, even if it does mean that they'd be getting more than they're worth. So are Manchester United going to sell them Jesse Lingard? Possibly not, because if Newcastle stay in the league, maybe they go and they spend 200 million during the summer. Maybe Newcastle over the next couple of years are a threat. Are Liverpool going to settle them a Nat Phillips? At the moment, it doesn't seem like it. So who are the players that come in and spark them? But we've seen time and time again, it takes one player. If they get Dele Alli, if Spurs were to let Dele Alli go, maybe Eddie Howe inspires something in Dele Alli for 6 months and he scores, like Jesse Lingard at West Ham last year, scores 7 or 8 goals. Like, that's enough, really.
Maybe Ronaldo would work for them, would he? Like the Northeast?
It wouldn't surprise me at this stage. I'm not sure he would, but he could probably helicopter it in. Michael Owen style.
He could indeed, yeah. Michael Owen, of course.
In that for training.
Yeah, it was more interested in the racing nowadays, become a big owner. But Nathan, just before we get to your team this season, your dad, Micheál, of course, has proper coaching background and pedigree in the kind of the Roscommon Mayo border. You're actually bred to be a coach, effectively.
Oh, pretty much. It's in my blood, Johnny. So picking a team like this comes naturally. And of course, I'm also a top coach of the Parkvale under eights.
Top coach.
Where we're top coach. A top coach. You know, well, there's three of us, so I can't say I'm the lead coach. I'll just say I'm the top. A top coach.
Kind of have there.
Like we're revolutionizing
the dressing room
football.
There.
We're revolutionizing.
How do you deal with the dressing room there of 7-year-olds, in fairness? It's tough call.
I'll tell you think that Manchester United dressing room is bad. I'm not sure there's quite as many tears in the Manchester United dressing room as there is in the Parkvale dressing room if things go horribly, horribly wrong.
Favoritism towards your son?
Of course. Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. That's why else would you get involved unless you get a favoritism towards your son? So
beautiful.
Yeah. You want my
let's talk
the,
your
it's
team.
It's not a half team, it's a team.
Your
of
team
the
of the your half team of the half season. it's already kind of a slightly boring Premier League in the sense that it's been amazing at times. It looks a bit of a fait accompli at the top, obviously with Man City, but obviously Man City dominating the team. Let's start with your keeper, who is not Man City actually.
No, he's not. And the reason for that is probably that Ederson doesn't have as much to do as anybody else because he has such a strong team in front of them. He probably has more clean sheets at this stage than he has saves. The player I'm going for in goal is Aaron Ramsdale. And I did not think I'd be saying this at the start of the season. He's got 9 clean sheets so far for Arsenal. Only Ederson has more. Still only 23. To be honest, I thought he was a bit of a poser when he came in and have watched him at the last couple of seasons when he was relegated both times. Has that sort of Jordan Pickford gene in him, but he has a real steeliness as well. And
likes winding up opposition fans as well,
which you got to love. Which you got to love. Seems to make a couple of outstanding saves in every game and just seems at the root of what looks like a new Arsenal, that there is a different attitude, that a nice blend of cockiness but also backing it up with a toughness as well. And it's hard to see how he doesn't end up as England's goalkeeper at the World Cup by the end of the year. Like, he has transformed that Arsenal back four. You look like you can trust them right now, and I think he's been exceptional so far. The other one who I thought has done really well, and again the last night you saw it with save at the end, was Jose Sa at Wolves, who came in place of Rui Patricio, who's obviously a hugely experienced keeper, who's ahead of him with the Portuguese national team, has been brilliant so far. But look, Ederson is probably, alongside Alisson, in the top 2-3 goalkeepers in the world right now. But you can't have every Manchester City player. It's always the problem when you're picking a team like this of how do you separate the individual from the team brilliance, and in some ways Manchester City maybe get hit by that. And also this season, we haven't really had... I remember picking a team of the half season last season. There was 2 or 3... bolters of teams last season with brilliant starts and you're putting Leeds players in there. That hasn't really happened so far this season, with the exception of West Ham. You know, the top three have been well ahead of everybody else, so it's hard to squeeze too many players in that are outside of those three teams.
Very briefly, so Dan McDonnell joined me tomorrow and we are delighted to have Dean Kiely on to talk about this ridiculous wealth of riches that Ireland have. What would you do if you were Caoimhín Kelleher at the moment?
Well, this is why I think the conversation is so interesting, that everybody feels that Caoimhín Kelleher may be the most unlucky Irish goalkeeper of all time. That, you know, he could end up having a fine career but be stuck behind Gavin Bazunu and end up with 25 caps. That this could flip very quickly, because Manchester City could well be looking at Gavin Bazunu and thinking, right, let's bring him back into the fold. Maybe not as number two, but because Zach Steffen is there as the American goalkeeper, maybe bring him as number three and maybe have him around Ederson and try and develop over the next couple of years. And likewise, Liverpool could say, well, the best thing now for Caoimhín Kelleher is to send him out on loan. So he could be sitting in 9 months' time where Kelleher is the one playing every week in the Championship or in League One, and Bazunu is the one who's around Manchester City but not playing. And then suddenly, Stephen Kenny has a real decision to make as to, do you stick with Bazunu, who clearly hasn't done anything wrong at all, or do you go with the guy who's in form at club level? So I don't think it's as set in stone as people think that Kelleher will be the unlucky one. And then you have Mark Travers sitting on the outside playing week in, week out on the verge of promotion back to the Premier League, thinking, what about me, guys? So it's a very nice complaint for us to have.
You talk a good game, Coach Murphy. Right back, I don't have the stats to hand here, but Trent Alexander-Arnold is effectively not a defender at all. His attacking stats are ridiculous. They're absolutely ridiculous. His ball for Salah for the goal on Sunday just sums up the brilliance of this player. And imagine he was one of the first on the Nathan team sheet, given your attacking style of play as well.
Yeah, and I bet you he'll still be somewhat controversial because there are so many questions over him defensively. He's got 9 assists already this season. He got 14 a couple of seasons ago. He's well on course to surpass that. And he's not the greatest defender in the world.
Who cares?
Well, exactly. The way Liverpool play relies on him being an attacking force. And his mindset is not the mindset of a defender. His mindset is not what might go wrong here and how do I get back to cover. You can tell his mindset is always one of positivity. Might the breaking ball fall in my favour? And even watching back the Chelsea game at the weekend, there was a couple of occasions in the build-up to one of the goals where it looked like it might break down. And his first inclination is always, I'm going to be ready to go rather than be ready to get back. Mm. And there's no way he's getting away with that if that's just his thing. Jurgen Klopp clearly wants that. He knows that the value of Trent Alexander-Arnold is in getting the ball. His ball breaks down in the in and around the halfway line, and he's gone, and he has the quality of passing. Like, his range of passing, if we're looking at the Premier League at the moment,
it's obscene.
The best passer in the Premier League.
It's obscene.
Trent Alexander-Arnold is right there. And he's a right back.
But you're talking about right back. When I used to play for Shiven Rovers, where did they put the worst player in the team? Fullback, basically. You play because it's the most kind of put him out of position, out of
do
trouble.
Do the least amount of damage.
Do the least amount of damage, like, you know, kind of tuck in for take the post at the corner, that sort of job. It's the most peripheral position on the pitch. Trent Alexander has not only become possibly the best right back in the game, he's redefined the position, completely redefined the position, albeit playing in a Liverpool team, as you saw on Sunday. Graham Garton spoke about it on commentary, the high line and all that. I mean, it's amazing to watch, and he is just at the centre of everything at right back.
Yeah, he has, and he's one of a few fullbacks that are redefining the game. Like, the position has been totally redefined. There's an expectation at the very best clubs for the fullbacks to do something completely different. You look at what Manchester City do, you look at what Thomas Tuchel does at Chelsea, and I think Reece James has had a brilliant season as well, and maybe better defensively than Alexander-Arnold, but on the ball has nowhere near the quality. Ben Chilwell might have been the best left back in the Premier League until he got injured. So the very best clubs, and it's when you watch Manchester United, it's quite obvious that, you know, and Shaw and Wan-Bissaka, they don't have two players of that quality who can create the amount of chances and get into the positions that those fullbacks at other clubs. And without focusing too much on England, because I know people don't overly care, like, the amount of quality right backs England have at the moment. We talk about Trippier coming back, Reece James, Kyle Walker, who might be first choice, Tariq Lamptey, who every time you watch him from Brighton is just outstanding. It's pretty frightening what they have at the moment in that one position. For left back, Johnny, and this guy could have been right back, but he's actually played more games at left back because Manchester City don't have too many options at left back, is João Cancelo, who again has redefined what a fullback can be, because he spends half the time at fullback and he spends half the time in the centre of midfield. Has a brilliant positional sense. I think it's such an important role for Guardiola. I remember being over at City a couple of years ago covering a match, and Danilo was playing at right back, and he was right down in front of us and right down in front of the technical area, and it was basically like watching a puppet. He couldn't do anything without Guardiola telling him to do it. He spent his entire match under the nose of Guardiola. He would, like, in a sprinter's position ready to start, and Guardiola tell him when to go, and he wouldn't go until Guardiola told him when to go. Whereas he doesn't need to do that with Cancelo. Cancelo knows exactly what Pep wants of him, and he knows when to move into midfield. He knows when to step forward. He knows when to cover. When they're under a little bit of pressure, as they were at times last week in one of the matches, he didn't really get forward at all. He just stayed back and did his defensive duty. Again, like Trent Alexander-Arnold, like, his range of passing. Think of that pass for Sterling for the goal earlier in the season with the outside of his right boot, when he's playing pretty much in the middle of midfield and he spins it in behind the defence. Like, Cancelo's been up there with the most important players in the Premier League over the last couple of seasons.
It is insane when you think of the quality that Portugal have in that team, that Ireland were so close to winning over there, and a valiant nil-all draw, which I think arguably probably deserved to actually win the game in terms of that controversial goal that was disallowed as well. Young Rudiger, to paraphrase The Simpsons, we could all learn a bit from young Rudiger, who is centre-back with Ruben Dias, which again was, I think this is a fairly explicable duo here.
Yeah, you could make an argument for Aymeric Laporte being in there, maybe alongside Ruben Dias, but Dias seems to never, ever make a mistake. And Rudiger's just been all action. It's still such a surprise that Chelsea, and maybe they are going all out behind the scenes to try and keep Rudiger. It does seem as though he's going to leave during the summer or huge wage somewhere else, because everything you hear out of Chelsea is that he is the man. He is the alpha male in that dressing room. He's the real leader of that Chelsea team, and he acts it out on the pitch. He's obviously a little bit rash at times, but his ability to step forward, again, he's a proper modern centre half, looks very comfortable on the ball. He's going to be a huge loss for Chelsea when he goes next year. Some of the other ones who I thought have had really good seasons, Ogbena and Zuma at West Ham, both of them got injured. It's such a testament to West Ham that they've still managed to keep going considering the injuries they've had at the back. Matip at Liverpool. Van Dijk was one I've seen in other people's team of the season.
No way.
I do look at him and go, if you've never seen Van Dijk before and you watch him this season, maybe you would do that. But, and I think he's definitely on his way back. There have been signs over the past month that he's getting close to his best. But when you think where he was a couple of years ago, he's probably not quite at that level just yet.
I mean, sometimes you underestimate the difficulty in getting over injuries as well, the injury to the extent that he got. And maybe he's 90% of the player he was, which isn't bad. OTBM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Obviously not in Nathan's case. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Nathan, this beard is becoming, it's really becoming, did it happen by accident for you, like for many of us, where just shaving became such a chore that just all of a sudden you had a beard without even knowing it?
You see, I've had a beard for about 10 years now. The odd time I just let it go particularly wild. I used to find that when you started growing the beard, it get really, really itchy after about a week, and you just go, it's not worth the hassle. But once you get through that a couple of times, just sort of sinks in. You see, is yours a beard? I don't know if yours is even a beard.
No, not really.
It's a bit of laziness.
No laziness in this midfield, of course. Declan Rice, Rodri and Conor Gallagher. Let's start with Declan Rice and get it out of the way.
Declan Rice,
what a baller.
It's sickening. It is absolutely sickening, Declan Rice. If it wasn't for John Delaney being given free reign of the FAI for 10 years, not capping Declan Rice would be the worst decision in the modern day history of the FAI. Declan Rice would have changed the game for Irish football.
Can we just talk about his performance this season? It hasn't happened, so there's no point hypothesizing now. Why is he in your team of the season?
Because every time you watch him, he's just getting better and better and better.
Man United are crying out for him.
I think Rodri's performances mean Manchester City don't need him, but I think any of the other top teams in Europe right now would take Declan Rice. He would be a huge improvement for Manchester United. I think he'd fit into that Liverpool team, no problem. I think he could get into that Chelsea team. I know Chelsea are reluctant to bring him back for the embarrassment of having let him go when he was a kid. He's 150 appearances in the Premier League already. He's only 22. And his ability to get around the pitch. When he first started out, I remember talking to some of the pundits who we'd cover a match with, and they weren't quite sure whether he'd ever develop past that sort of what now modern holding midfielder role, you know, nice and tidy and 100 passes a game, none of them go more than 5 yards. He can pass as good as any central midfielder in the Premier League right now. Long range balls out of the full backs. Doesn't take the easy option. You know, turn in midfield, set off an attack, can dribble. He can do absolutely everything. And also does the defensive side as well. Always seems to be in the right place at the right time. It's scary how good he has got, even over the last year, 18 months, and at still only 22. He could become the best midfielder in world football over the next 5 years.
It's lovely to see. Rodri, what a footballer. Yeah, what a footballer. I absolutely love watching him.
Yeah, and has gone on to a totally different level this season. You really sense that Manchester City miss him when he's not there. Last year, you know, Fernandinho came in, or Rodri, it didn't seem to make a huge amount of difference. Manchester City look a far weaker team now when Rodri isn't there driving things. Again, like Rice, I think takes a few more risks now in the middle of midfield. At first was just simple and let the more talented, more creative players do the business. But I think now he's taken on a lot more responsibility. And like that game against Arsenal came at a good time for picking a team at a half season, because he was the best player on the pitch in that game from Manchester City's point of view. And you know, he's still only 25 as well. I think sometimes when we look at players coming in from abroad, you sort of assume they're the finished article when they arrive because a big fee has been spent. Like, he's still has his best years to come. And yeah, I think he's probably been Manchester City's most important player this season in a team that's, you know, again, running away with the Premier League title.
Yeah, and yeah, it's like when you're talking about somebody running a game, it doesn't exist as much maybe as it did in the Roy Keane days, but he's definitely up there. Conor Gallagher is an interesting one, which obviously not many people would have been watching him week to week. He's on loan, but very good stats as well. Can't say I've seen much of him, but you obviously have.
Yeah, well, I've ended up commentating on Crystal Palace quite a few times this season, and every time you watch him, he impresses. And look, it's a hard decision not to just throw Bernardo Silva in there again and add another Manchester City player. But Palace are one of the stories of the season, considering there were big questions about letting Roy Hodgson go.
Big time.
Stay with the safe option, finish 16th in the league, be happy with that. They brought in Patrick Vieira. They got rid of a lot of the older players, have gone with youth, and are great to watch. Yeah, they're inconsistent, but I wouldn't mind that. If they finish mid-table and they're playing the style of football they're playing, I think most Palace fans would be pretty happy. And like Conor Gallagher's real good enthusiasm for the game. He was at West Brom last year and he always looked talented, but it was a struggle. They were in a relegation scrap, whereas actually having the bit of freedom at Palace of them playing well seems to suit him down to the ground. And the only question with Gallagher is what happens next. Like, is he good enough for Chelsea? Is he good enough to go back and stake a claim in that Chelsea team? He's been out on loan for the last 3 or 4 years, playing week in, week out. Do you want to go back to Chelsea if you're, you know, going to be stuck on the bench for the first couple of months of the season and thinking, can I get out on loan again? He could be in a position where he's playing for England, but not been able to get a game at his club. So I think at the moment he looks good enough to go back and certainly be part of that Chelsea squad and be in and around the first 11. You know, he's able to get a goal. He's got 6 goals already this season and seems to have that bit of leadership as well, I think, around that Palace team, even at a very young age, that, you know, he can grab the game by the scruff of the neck. So I wanted to get somebody that wasn't just one of the top two or three teams in there, and I think Conor Gallagher has probably been best of the rest this season.
No mention of a Man United player even in the picture at all yet, and I don't think this extends to the strikers either.
No, well, who do you put in? Like, you know, some would say De Gea has been their player this season. Like, De Gea is a great shot stopper. You still feel as though there's a mistake there from De Gea, and I don't think there's anybody else who you could put in. Ronaldo, 6 weeks ago, maybe you could have made a case for it because of the goals he has scored and the importance of the goals he scored. But this United team have been humiliated at times this season. They've lost 6 of the last 14. I think you'd really struggle to make a case for any Manchester United player to get in that side.
Not a bad front three here, and not a bad balance to your team, I have to say, either. I think this team could function quite okay if Nathan were to become the first Republic of Ireland manager in the four divisions at the moment. Mo Salah, this might sound completely insane, but it's only this season I've noticed how good a passer of the ball he is. A lot of the time he's not even looking. He's passing because he's obviously quite a selfish player in the sense that he wants to score goals. His performances this season for me, Nathan, are well up there with Ronaldo and Messi at their best. Like, I just cannot get over his production every week, his goals, but also his all-round play. Needed a break, obviously. Got his break in the off-season. Best player in the world at the moment.
Oh, it's the quality of goals he scores as well, and can score any goal. Like, he's in the right position for a handy tap-in. You know, he can smash one in from 25, 30 yards out. And like, you think of the goal he scored against Manchester City and then a week later against Watford, where he's in an almost impossible position against some of the best defenders in the world, and he manages to wiggle his way through. And then the quality of his finishing, like the way he can control his left foot and that he can bend his left foot to basically contort to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. You're right. I think his passing has gone to another level. It did feel at the end of last season that there was a breakdown between himself and Mane and maybe a lack of trust between the two of them. It definitely felt as though there was something going on. But there's been no signs of that at all this season. And some of the passing, again, what he can do with the outside of his left boot is right up there with anybody. And Salah's always been a strange player in terms of how people view him. In that, the amount of conversations I had over the last few years about Mane and Firmino with Liverpool fans, and they would always make a case for them ahead of Salah almost. But like, is the amount of goals he scores speaks for itself. Like, he scored more goals in a single 38 game season than anybody else in the Premier League in his first season, and has got in and around 20 every season since then. Has already got 16 this season. Let's see how many games he misses at the African Cup of Nations, but is well on course to get 30 again. And you're right, I think it's probably between himself and Lewandowski for who is right now the best player in the world.
I was one of the people who was calling out Salah a bit in recent years, because I also thought he just was playing too many games and he needed a break, and that I think that came out in his performances. I think he's completely stepped up a level this year. We've loads of texts coming in. Good stuff, lads. The West awake this morning. Golly Babu from Aina. Carl Richard Slaney. Hey lads, Richard here living in the US. Great show. Currently recovering from shoulder surgery and can't sleep. Good luck with that, Richard. Hopefully we'll have that soporific quality that we aim for every morning here in the show. Kelleher should move to a West Ham or Leicester-like team to get some more game time, and that could obviously be on the agenda. Brian Dillon, stop calling him Coach Murphy. He likes it and will want to be called it from now on, Coach Murphy. Richard Redballs, Van Dijk is finished. Look at his job against Chelsea. And shifty lad, Rice would be some centre-back, to be honest. He most certainly would.
Well, that's John Giles makes that point all the time, that Rice could easily step back. Mm. Now, I would make the point that, like, are you not wasting Declan Rice by putting him at centre half, because he won't be able to have as much of an impact? But maybe, listen, as he gets to, in 7 or 8 years' time, he can nicely just step back and become a sweeper.
And you'll be then managing the under 16,
under 15, under 15, under 15. That'll be an easy task, won't it?
So briefly, we have two more positions to fill, both of them at Man City. You've gone from Foden and Mahrez.
Yeah, to be honest, it was really hard to decide who to put in. The other contenders were, say, Mikel Antonio, who just seems to have brought his game to another level. So important for West Ham, who've been brilliant this season. Emmanuel Dennis at Watford, you know, scoring goals. I remember watching them in the Champions League for Club Brugge against Real Madrid a couple of years ago and thinking this guy looked the business. And then he did nothing really for 2 or 3 years. So I'm not sure anyone expected him to score the amount of goals for Watford that he has. And he may well keep them in the Premier League. But for Manchester City's dominance, I think they need a couple of players in there. The problem is they rotate so often. Which attacking players do you put in? Like, Raheem Sterling has been brilliant over the last few weeks. Phil Foden's only started 10 games, but he was the best player on the pitch against Liverpool. He was the best player on the pitch against Manchester United. He scored that important goal against Brentford the last night. Like, they're using him when they need to use him. Mm. He's obviously had some off-the-field issues in that he went out one night.
I mean,
crazy stuff.
Awful, awful. So just before we wrap this up here, who's your assistant manager? We need some sort of yes man.
You want in, Johnny?
Not me. I'm just looking around the off the ball studio. Who do you go for? You've got a lot of very erudite football people there. Oof. Ultimately has to be ultimately subservient to Coach Murphy as well, and just say that you're right all along and don't really challenge it.
No, I'd like you, Johnny. I think you'd put the armour on the shoulder.
Bit of good cop, bad cop.
A bit of good cop, bad cop. Yeah, but I think the players would like you. You know, I think you'd have the armour on the players. They'd feel good going on out onto the pitch. You know, you wouldn't be the Roy Keane type.
No, I don't.
I'd have you on board, Johnny.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know if there might be questions about turning up to the training ground on time and things like that and setting a good example, but
yeah, it might be more Trophy era than sort of Guardiola, I guess. Like, but
go on.
Yeah.
Johnny Ward's Cluffy speech.
It's a bit early. We have to go to the Az. Nathan, I think you've done a good job on your team.
I haven't given my last one. Riyad Mahrez. The last player. Mahrez. He's only started 8 games. Again, he's started less than half games.
Which is kind of mad when you think Mahrez and Foden between them have played how many games in City or what? 28 points clear?
Exactly. So between them, they started 18 games in the Premier League this season. He scored in his last 4 starts, Riyad Mahrez. So in this run where they've really kicked on, he's been brilliant. I think actually after Mo Salah, he's the best player in the Premier League. Mm. Every time I watch him, his control is out of this world. His ability when Cancelo or Zinchenko or whatever it is sends one of those 80-yard balls to sort of just take it at his instep. It's outrageous what Riyad Mahrez can do. So I want him in my team of the season every time. No Kevin De Bruyne is always the one, I guess, that people look at.
Just creeping back into form.
Played a huge amount of games. And
Yeah,
I still think there's a lot more from De Bruyne. But yes, an outstanding team of the season. You know, good balance. I think you could work with these guys as well, Johnny.
Not bad, young man. Let's go to the ads. OTB AM. Before we get to Ross Tierney, Nathan, the Jason Knight to Leeds rumour is one that intrigues me. And we're talking about teams that could potentially get sort of dragged into the race. Leeds have had lots of excuses this season. At the same time, they've only 19 points, 8 ahead of Newcastle, for example. Knight to come into the Bielsa regime would be a fascinating one.
Yeah, it's the sort of move you'd love to see Jason Knight make, because Leeds are still a huge club. It comes with a lot of pressure, I think, all the time. playing for Leeds, and yeah, they are in a relegation scrap. I would hope they'd be fine. I think the excuses are legitimate excuses. They've missed their two best players for pretty much all the season in Patrick Bamford and Calvin Phillips. Now, Phillips is probably not going to play a huge amount again, which would be a worry. But Jason Knight, it does seem as though something is going to happen. He's been linked with any amount of clubs, and like Bielsa is one of the most interesting coaches in world football. He plays a thoroughly modern brand that if you want to go and play for one of the best clubs in the world, I think you need to be able to play that way now. That real high intensity, non-stop, pressing high, putting your opposite number under real pressure every time he's on the ball. But then when you get it, being able to move it on quickly. Like the speed that Leeds play at when they're at their best is as good as anybody in the Premier League. So I think for Jason Knight to get an opportunity to be exposed to that at a huge club, like that's probably as good a move as you could wish for Jason Knight right now.
Say if you're the Motherwell manager, start of the season, Graham Alexander is you're Graham Alexander. What do you say to young Ross Tierney when you're giving him his debut? Is he a good lad?
I'm saying don't go on doing interviews with Johnny Ward for starters. he'll bring you down a bad road.
Good morning, Ross.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Not too bad.
Are you ready for action, or what's when is this Motherwell, the much anticipated Motherwell debut going to start for you?
Well, our next game is on the 18th of January, and I'm currently in isolation with COVID, so not a great start, I must say.
How do you feel?
I feel grand, just feel a bit tired, but then like if I don't go to sleep, I get the burst of energy, so it's weird though.
And you have two young kids as well, so obviously as a young parent, the challenge is to restrict COVID to yourself as well.
Yeah, so thankfully they've all tested negative, so it's just my friends, they've tested positive, and a few lads off the team. But no, the two lads that, my friends that didn't test positive are the only two lads in the group that have the booster, so must be working.
There you go. So what's happened since you left Bowes?
Not much really. I've signed for Motherwell. I've enjoyed my time off. I've enjoyed my time at Bowes. But now I came over on the 12th of December, I think. And I trained for a week with the lads, just to get to know the lads. And yeah, I enjoyed it. And now I came back on Sunday, the 2nd. And thought I was ready to go on Monday, but COVID struck, so.
Ross, in terms of possibilities of where you might have gone after Bowes, or maybe even staying at Bowes, can you talk us through those last few weeks and contract negotiations and the options that were on the table for you?
Yeah, look, the deal wanted to get done in summer, but unfortunately things didn't click and didn't go. I stayed to the end of the season, thankfully, and unfortunately we didn't win that, but get Europe. But it was a great season. Personally and collectively, like, we made great memories and we had a good run in Europe, so that was unbelievable. But I sort of not had options, but I had interest from England and other places in Scotland, but they were more 23s and sometimes on the bench on first team, like, and more money, obviously, like, Motherwell's not a big budget, but I'm happy with the money I'm on, to be honest. It's paying bills and but I just took into account that I'm still only 20, so I'm a young lad, and it was 26, 27, maybe I'd be looking at money-wise, but I'm looking just to progress my career, and thankfully Motherwell said I'd be in around the first team, and I'd be a first team player, so I'm glad.
The extra six months you ended up spending at Bowes, do you feel a better player for those 6 months and playing regularly?
Oh yeah, 100%. Look, I'll be where playing at a high level, people don't understand how intense and how good of a level the Irish League is. Like, but yeah, I felt like I just needed to play last year. Like I said at the start of the season, I was planning on going out alone. Thankfully, I broke into the team and I played regularly. Me and Georgie just had a good partnership. So yeah, I enjoyed my time, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, when we get to the papers, plenty of chat about Georgie Kelly from Aidan Fitzmaurice in the Endo today in terms of where he might go and some very interesting options, mentioned. But Rory O'Connor, who's a Bows fan, was on yesterday. He was so sad, obviously, to see all these Bows players go, including you, Ross. But one of the main, tenets of our chat was this influx of players from Ireland to the SBL. Why do you think this is happening? Is it to do with what happened with Jamie McGrath, his subsequent progression to the Irish team? Obviously, Liam Scales getting massive kudos at Celtic as well. What appeals to Irish players to go to the SBL?
It's not the weather anyways. I'm not sure. Like, obviously, I think Jamie was probably one of the first lads that came from the League of Ireland to the SBFL, and I think he's done well and people can see his quality. So I think a lot more teams, not even just in Scotland and England as well, are starting to look to the League of Ireland because they realise the quality that is in the league now. And I think Brexit has helped as well with that, because obviously it'd be 18 to go, so the younger lads now are not going over 16 and then falling off when they're 21. They're going through the ranks in 17s and 19s back home, and then they get the chance in the men's senior team. So I think it's great for the League of Ireland as well, especially financially. But it interested me. It was just playing fourth team and taking another step in the right direction. And so I don't know. Like, obviously, Johnny Kenny, there's talks of him signing for Celtic, and Daz, Dara Burns was supposed to come over, but I don't know what's going on there. But for me, like, obviously, I obviously knew Jamie McGrath playing from the fucking senior language, playing the senior Irish team. So that was also an interest. Like, you wouldn't think St. Mirren are a big club, but he's a regular in the Irish senior men's team. So as me as playing 21s, like, that was obviously a push for me. And I knew that if I'm playing here regularly and playing well, that I could get the chance soon and might be able to do what Jay do.
Yeah, and the lad who's struggling to sleep with the shoulder injury, Ross, is just woken him up there again. But I think Ross is going to wake up a few people with his SPL forms next season. This was a really interesting thing I thought yesterday. Kenny Shields, a former Derry manager, was quoted as saying that he thinks some of the teams in the SPL play a style of football that actually isn't suiting, for example, the likes of Aaron McInniff at Hearts. Now, I would notice of late, just watching some games, the pitches wouldn't be great compared to maybe the summer football in Ireland. What are your preconceptions about the style of football going over there in the sort of lower half of the SPL, Ross?
Well, look, it's obviously not the biggest league in the world. Maybe it takes Celtic and Rangers out, but Motherwell, like, there's quality everywhere in the team, and like, the standard is what I expected, to be fair. Like, I just came in with hopes, but the standard back home that we had, like, it's high. Like, so I'm not in deep water. And obviously, Jamie McGrath can show that the talent in the league was there. So
you've mentioned that a couple of times, Ross, about the standard at home. And, you know, you look at I've made this point before. If Rovers play Derry next season, you'll have Jack Byrne, Dylan Watts, Danny Mandrew, Graham Burke against Patrick McElhinney, Will Patching, and, you know, McElhinney, to name but three. The standard in the League of Ireland, from your perspective, having played under 21s and gone over to Scotland, you obviously have a high regard for it.
Yeah, look, all you have to do is look at our finish in the table and then look how well we've done in Europe against big teams. Like, I didn't really take it and look at it until I left and realised, like, bet against top teams in Europe, and we beat top teams. Like, we beat Pauk in the Aviva, like, hear me? So, like, the talent back home, and it's great. Like, you look at the senior men's team, you think how many players have come from the League of Ireland, and look how well we're doing now, and obviously next League of Ireland manager, so it's great. Like, so it's gone the right direction, thankfully.
Yeah, the bit that still seems to be missing is getting the full value for players. Like, you mentioned Pauk, I think of Christos Cholas, who came off the bench for Pauk in that match, who ends up signing for Norwich for 10 million. Yeah, and he's not even starting for Pauk in that game. Whereas, unfortunately, the money that's coming in for League of Ireland players is obviously a million miles away from that. In terms of the move to Scotland, like, you're still a very young guy, as you say. You know, you're not good over at 16, but you're still an under 21 player. And, you know, you've been very honest, I think, over the last year about, you know, some of the difficulties in your personal life and that. Had you any concerns about moving away from home? And have you seen a sign that Motherwell is a good club for making you feel at home in Scotland? I know it's not a million miles away, but it's still, you know, it's a flight home, and it's in COVID times. It's not quite as easy as it once would have been.
No, look, for me, obviously, I didn't get the chance to go away when I was 16 or 17, and I played at both 17s, 19s, and then senior team. But so I always still have little boy's dreams to play professional football. So I was coming over excited, a new challenge, and getting to live my dream and moving to a different country didn't really bother me, because my girlfriend and two kids are going to come soon enough anyway. So, well, I'm settling in myself, and the lads are all great with me. So it's not much different to back home in terms of weather-wise and the lads and the crack. But no, for me, it's just living my dream, and I'm just excited to get going. So, yeah.
Do you have Ireland ambitions now? Because I don't know, when Jamie McGrath went over, and I'm not putting Jamie down here, but I think people would have been surprised that he ended up being an Ireland regular and a thoroughly justified Ireland regular. The position you're in, maybe is, I'm not saying you're going to start for Ireland anytime soon, but it might be a little bit up for grabs in the near future in terms of the 10 position or at least competition for places. What are your ambitions in that regard? Because you've done so well with the 21s as well, having scored last year.
Yes. Kind of concentrate on Motherwell, to be perfectly honest with you, but meet up with the lads hopefully in there if I get in the squad for March. But no, look, I haven't even thought about seeing this call up or anything like that. But I know that if I play well for a couple of years here, that chance might come around. And obviously, you can see with the manager we have now and Steve, that he'd give that chance to young lads, not afraid to give that chance. And like, you can see that with Jason Knight and Almeida and Troy Parada and even Gav Bazunu and Andrew, like to name a few. Like, a lot of lads that have played 21s last year are regulars now in the senior team, so like, we know the opportunity is there.
Would you have got that sense, Ross, around the Ireland under 21 camp, that there's a feeling there's not a big gap between that 21 squad and the senior squad now? Because, you know, you look at the more experienced 21s, the likes of Conor Coventry or Gavin Kilkenny, it doesn't feel as though they're a world away from the senior squad. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Gavin Kilkenny starting for the senior squad by the end of this year.
Well, obviously, Gav's doing brilliant at Bournemouth, and the team is doing well. And they look like they're going to get promoted to the Prem. So, in terms of that, like, you don't even have to just look at them lads. Like, you just look at the 21s, that the amount of people that are actually starting first team in the Championship and League One, like, yeah, Will Smallbone, that was starting in the Prem. So, like, there's a lot of players in 21s, not even just Gav and Cov, that aren't a million miles away from the first team. But, like, I don't think, I include myself in that if the likes of Troy and Jason wasn't in the senior team, that we probably wouldn't get a call up to 21s, you know? So, I think in the past that I don't think we had enough young lads in the fourth team that gave the 21s the chance to be that strong as it is now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we've Ev Ferguson on the bench for Brighton now, and like, he's in 21s and he'd be there for now a couple of years unless he goes straight to the fourth team, which wouldn't surprise me. But now, like, I enjoy being the lads every camp, and we have new players come in, and they've all just done well. We have a tight group, and yeah, it's just, hopefully, I'm not really thinking about fourth senior call, but more thinking about Motherwell and the 18th against West County.
Yeah, that's probably important. You mentioned Evan Ferguson, one of the many, many players come through St. Kevin's. We have a photo here that you actually introduced to me, Ross, there around the time of the PFAI Awards. This is an absolute perler of a photo. Can you name, well, obviously you can, because it's Danny Mandrew on the right. Who's on the left? Would you know, Nathan?
I can't even see the photo, Johnny, so I would most definitely be guessing.
Just say Ross Tierney.
Ross Tierney, looking good, Ross.
Yeah, Ross, you're small in stature compared to Big Dan.
I've always been small in stature, but I've always like, you know, when I was playing back home with my brother, like he wouldn't go easy on me, so I was always used to playing with bigger lads. So you could see that on the pitch, that was no fear. But yeah, look, it was great. I think that was after the EA Sports Cup when we played Cork, we beat them 2-0 or 2-1.
What age are you?
I was 18 at the time. I was about to do my leaving cert.
Yeah, of all the League of Ireland players who may make that push into the senior squad, Mandrew must be right up there. I know it was highly controversial, he wasn't in the PFAI team of the year, but in any event, you imagine it's a big year for him playing alongside Jack Byrne as well.
Yeah, well, how would you feel? Like, obviously I don't really worry about what's going on at Rovers, but like their manager has a tough job in his hands, like with the amount of families he has, like that. But Danny's probably best player I've played with, but his quality is just unbelievable. And you can just see when he's not feeling the things he does, he's just an album. But yeah, I get him a few hits here and there, but he's a good lad.
Two good kids from Ballymun. Just finally, what are the aspirations for Motherwell? You're flying it in the table this season. What is the hope before the end of the campaign once you get into the team, hopefully?
Well, obviously I haven't been in long enough to talk with the lads or talk with the gaffer about my ambitions. But obviously my ambitions are just to get into the team. I'm obviously coming in January. We've only half season left, so hopefully I can just hit the ground running. And team ambitions, like obviously you want to get Europe. Like I think we're doing well now, but I think we just want to. We'd like to qualify for Europe and get a good run in the cup. So hopefully I can help the lads.
Celtic at home on the 6th of February is a nice little target.
It is, obviously, like I'm a big Celtic fan, as most Irish lads are, but I think my dad's more interested in the Celtic game than watching me do well. He hasn't stopped talking about that. He's like, it's not how you're getting on, Ross. Are you settling well? It's like, yeah, you have to get things for the Celtic game.
I can already envisage you giving Liam Scales a kick.
I know, Scales is a good lad. I've got a few kicks off Scales in the derbies, but no.
Just to clarify before you go, our producer Tommy Rooney, in case there were any confusion, you were not 18 in that photo with Danny Mandrew. What age were you roughly in that photo? I hope it wasn't 18.
Oh, the little one.
Yeah.
I was talking about the one me and Danny. Jesus, that one I would have been. I think that was the year Danny was gone to Brighton.
Wow.
So I think he went to when he was 17. I would have been about 13, 14.
That would make a little bit more sense because you look particularly fresh-faced for an 18-year-old. And I think for all about me trying to get into Barrett's back in the day, you weren't getting into any nightclubs looking like that anyway.
No, that was actually, it's mad to think that would have been four years later, that would have been only. Jesus, I grew up all right, didn't I?
You certainly did.
Danny's still a handsome man.
He's a handsome man and not afraid to show it off on Instagram either. But there's nothing wrong with that. Great to talk to you, Ross, and hope you're back on your feet very soon.
Perfect. Thank you.
Nathan, I've been a massive fan of him for a while. But he's, again, just grown as a player.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how he gets on. And like Jamie McGrath's obviously an inspiration to all those players going over because, as you say, you know, going to St Mirren, not a really renowned club for providing international players. And you look at him now, if he's not in the Ireland starting 11, he's player 12 or 13 around the starting 11. So like it's a real good ambition for Ross to have over the next couple of years to try and make his way through. And obviously he's done a good job with the 21s already. So yeah, can't wait to see how he gets on over the next little while and how many of those Irish players, because he may not be the last to go over the next few weeks to Scotland.
Definitely not. And I think there's a definitely renewed interest in the SPL in Ireland now with all these players going over and Jamie McGrath and obviously Conor Roan at St Mirren. And I don't know, Ross is one of these players. I know like everyone now, they have the GPS data. So these kind of lazy number 10s can't get away with not doing that much running anymore. But Ross was just from another era anyway. He's pestering off the ball is a joy to behold. Donnelly. I think he's a manager's dream, and really wish him the best in Mirren. We'll get to the papers now. Plenty to get through today. This is the Irish Times. Settled Roundtree happy to commit future to Munster. We spoke to Ron O'Gara yesterday about Munster. Unfortunately, Ireland Six Nations games dominate Virgin viewing figures. Unfortunately, nervous month awaits as COVID threatens to disrupt Six Nations. And this is a feature also on the Indo. Six Nations to start behind closed doors. The headline might be jumping the gun a small bit. It's more that they're kind of preparing for the possibility of that. And knee injury puts Mannion up against the clock to make the Leinster final, and that's Crokes against Naas in a fascinating game, 5 o'clock on Saturday. Irish Examiner, Cathal Dennehy on long-term value of sporting memories will far outweigh the cost, and that's Cathal on the back page talking about running as well. And I have to say I like this story, Nathan, why Imlen Mulligan is back in the Leitrim fold. We spoke to Cathal Mullany yesterday about the game behind in the dome between Mayo and between Leitrim and Sligo, but it's lovely to see the revival in Leitrim, and obviously our man at the helm as well, former Roscommon League player actually indeed.
Some would have said Andy Moore was a far better soccer player when he was about 15, 16.
Quality football. I played under Gaelic 14 footballer with him, I think. Yeah, quality soccer.
But yeah, look, it's great to see Imlen Mulligan back. He's one of those players that everyone has always felt a touch of sympathy for, that because he was from one of the smaller counties, never got the opportunities to show his skill set on the very biggest stage. I remember about 4 or 5 years ago, we had him on. He'd never played at Croke Park at that stage ever. I think there has to be some sort of an opportunity for players like that. So it looked as though his intercounty career was over, but obviously Andy Moore has come in. There's a buzz around the place in Leitrim. It's such a shame, I think, for a county like Leitrim that the proposal B didn't go through and that they're not getting a proper championship, because they play London first up at like the third week in April, and then the winners of that play Mayo or Galway, and like that's their Connacht championship over, regardless of how well Andy Moran does.
Because Leitrim against, I didn't watch the game the other night, but Leitrim against Sligo is actually entertaining when you get teams that are like the standard of Gaelic football, even at the lower level, is good at the moment. So if you were to, they're very well in great physical shape. If you could have some sort of a system where you had a junior championship or even more of a league based system, and it would be a big deal for Imlen Mulligan to take on Sligo and win and bring some pride to Carrick on Shannon, what's wrong with that instead of getting beaten by 60 points against Mayo?
Well, I think it's incredible that we got to the second morning of January before we got into GEA structures conversation. It looks as though something is going to happen, and that the proposal B, the momentum that was behind it, something will change over the next year or two that allows that to happen. The other thing that stood out from that Sligo-Leitrim game, and I only saw the highlights, was that it was a game at the beginning of January being played indoors. Obviously, it made history. It was in the dome. Just outside Ballyhaunis, you know, we now have the finest GEA structure in the entire country down west. But because the conditions were absolutely perfect, like the scoring was free flowing, the quality of football was brilliant, that, you know, often these preseason comps are played in absolute muck and wind and rain and nobody cares about them. Whereas you watch that game the last time, you think this is, you know, I get two evenly matched teams. I could watch this. I could enjoy this. So I don't know if we're going to see too many more domes built around the country, but there's certainly a use for them.
Yeah, and there's one of the lads in one of the WhatsApp groups, and he goes, I'm not going to name the player, but he was talking to a very, very high profile Gaelic Games player about it. He was saying everyone goes out thinking they'll hit the roof, no bother, but nobody can get near it. Apparently that's the big challenge now when you get into the dome. Try to hit the roof.
Try and hit the roof, yeah. I presume with a Schlitter you could probably hit the roof. Yeah, going back to Midas Nightclub in Ballyhaunis, we did in the 90s have the great entertainment venue of the West, and now thanks to the dome we have the greatest entertainment venue in the West in Ballyhaunis once again. Slightly different type of entertainment, but
yeah,
you know.
And yet again, I'm going to make that really, really poor joke about Nathan having the Midas touch. There we go, just made it there. Martin Breheny, GAA have made a huge mistake with fixtures at the back of the Herald. And again, more stuff about the Six Nations. The back of the Times London edition, we'll talk to Colin Boohig about this. Novak, no problem. 9 times champion Djokovic given medical exemption to defend his title at the Australian Open. Ericsson World Cup, Nathan, how lovely would that be?
Oh, I think everybody would love to see Christian Eriksen find a way to go to the World Cup finals with a Denmark team who are just flourishing. Ever since they got through the drudgery of having to play Ireland every couple of months, they have kicked on with their, you know, They went through a revolution. They decided they had a good manager who was bringing them a reasonable amount of success qualifying for tournaments, but the football was dull as dishwater. Brought in a new manager, attacking, free-flowing, modern style of play, and even with the loss of Christian Eriksen, have gone through World Cup qualifying, flew through, winning all their matches. And if they can add Eriksen on top of that, even as an impact player off the bench, Denmark can go and have a very good World Cup. It'll be one of the stories of the World Cup, one of the few good news stories at the World Cup in Qatar, if Christian Eriksen can find his way onto the pitch.
And you do feel that all of the difficulties that Eriksen has come through and all those challenges ahead, if there's one thing he needs, it's Coach Murphy. You can just feel it. OTBM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Somehow I'm actually interested in your under-9s team now, or your under-8s
team. Well, I'm thinking, Johnny, I'm thinking what I want we need updates. Is a fly-in-the-wall documentary. And you could come up and give a little rousing team talk. At some stage, we the under-8s played the Shamrock Rovers under-8s. I was away this week, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
So my two fellow coaches took charge, but they both said they had never seen anything like the Shamrock Rovers under-8s. Now, we're a very small sort of community team, so you know, we got a real mix of players, and they were just delighted, you know, to go up and play against Shamrock Rovers, who are the best team probably in the country at that level. But they said the level of organization, passing, picking the right ball at the right time.
Sorry, under eight.
Under eight, yes.
And Stephen Bradley has spoken about this, that he, you know, some people say the underage national leagues are too old, starting 13, which now they're 14. Stephen Bradley said it's much too late. And I'm also kind of wondering, like, how young is too young as well? You know, and you talk about organisation of under-8s, like...
Yeah, and these are clearly very talented players, and I would agree with that. Like, what, you know, how young is too young to be organised, and also how young is too young to be that good and that dominant in that...
Wasn't a problem for us.
Too easy. No, that's for sure. Can it become too easy for you too quickly when, like, nobody can get near you at that age? But... Yeah, they by all accounts looked to be a different breed, all right. And I think that question continues up to under 13, under 15. You know, are you missing out on a lot of players if, you know, if you're a scout? And I'm sure some of them are looking at under 8s teams for early potential. You know, are you looking around the country, or do you just go, I'll just go to Shamrock Rovers because I know they have the best of the best already? But look, they're clearly doing something right, and the players at that age clearly enjoy being that good, are that good. So yeah, it's a very, look, it's such a difficult balance to get between getting the best players on the pitch together all the time while trying to keep it fun for them and for everybody else that they play against, to play alongside, and the players aren't left behind. It's like that's the biggest difficulty with underage football, Johnny.
Yeah,
in Dublin,
I remember being thrown into the under 13s as a 9-year-old for shivving against Roscommon Town. The jersey is basically down to your
I presume that's not because you were a child genius.
No,
they literally didn't.
No, we needed players and got absolutely hammered, as we always did against Roscommon Town. Very, very briefly, Toxic United, that's the back of the Mail. The rest of the tabloids basically all on the Man United team, which will be obviously part of the narrative ahead of the Villa game, which I believe is early next week. Will O'Callaghan has the sports news. Good morning, Will.
Morning, lads. How you getting on?
What's going on?
That's plenty. I mean, you've got the League Cup semi-final coming up this evening. London rivals Chelsea and Tottenham. A certain Romelu Lukaku back in the Chelsea squad after his apology, including the video which went up on Chelsea's social media accounts last night. He was dropped for the Premier League draw, you'll remember, against Liverpool on Sunday, following that pretty controversial interview with Sky Italia where he said he wasn't happy at the European Champions and that he would like to go back to Inter Milan. Now, Lukaku has since apologised, and boss Thomas Tuchel hopes that the fans at Stamford Bridge will be able to forgive him.
He's very aware of what happened and what he created, and he is in he feels the responsibility to clean the mess up. Maybe we will have a bit of a smell still from it, of course. He can handle it. He has. There's also no other choice. He cannot expect now everybody to be super happy the very next day. But he is still our player, and we have good reasons and a lot of reasons to make him play for us and to convince him and to fight hard that he is our player. We are happy that he's our player, and we will protect him.
Lukaku there back for Chelsea, lads. Spurs could be without a couple of players because of COVID. They're awaiting the results of PCR tests, while the EFL are yet to make a decision on Liverpool's request to postpone tomorrow's League Cup semi-final. They're due to play Arsenal in the first leg of that tie, with further cases of COVID-19 within the red squad. Manager Jurgen Klopp and three of his players, Alisson, Roberto Firmino and Joel Matip, were all absent from that 2-2 draw against Chelsea at the weekend because of coronavirus. A further round of testing found more cases within the first team bubble, forcing them to cancel yesterday's training session. Meanwhile, Kieran Trippier will undergo a medical at Newcastle today ahead of a proposed £12 million transfer from Atletico Madrid. The right back will become the Premier League club's first signing since their takeover by Saudi owners. Trippier helped Atletico to win the Spanish title last season and was part of the England side that reached the Euro 2020 final in the summer just gone, and he previously played under Eddie Howe at Burnley. Southampton's new owners have been warning their fans not to expect a revolution following their takeover by the investment firm Sport Republic. The Premier League club is the group's first acquisition, with them aiming to build a portfolio of sporting assets across the world. They're led by the Serbian-born cable television tycoon Dragan Solak, and the former Brentford director Rasmus Ankersen is also involved. As you mentioned, on the back of some of the newspapers, including The Independent and The Herald today, Kilmacud Croke's forward Paul Mannion now a major fitness doubt for their Leinster club football final against Naas at Croke Park this Saturday. The three-time All-Star forward has been unable to train since he picked up a knee injury in last month's semi-final victory against Port Arlington. The Kilmacud boss Robbie Brennan says that Mannion has not suffered ligament damage, but admits he's facing a race to be fit for the decider. A story that's been running either side of the Irish Sea today: the organisers of the Six Nations considering playing some of the matches at this year's tournament behind closed doors if the COVID-19 situation doesn't improve. They've been holding talks with the six unions about contingency plans to potentially allow games to go ahead without supporters instead of postponing the fixtures. There's not much room in the calendar if they were to look to refix them. England is the only competing nation without crowd restrictions currently in place, while Ireland are due to play three home games in the competition this season. Restrictions on crowds in Ireland are in theory in place until the end of this month, with the tournament set to get underway on the first week of February. And I know you're going to be talking to Colin Buig about this in a moment, but the Australian Open organisers insisting this morning that Novak Djokovic didn't get special treatment in being granted a medical exemption to play. The world number one will defend his title in Melbourne this month after receiving an exemption to participate just before he travelled. All players at the first Grand Slam of the year have to be either vaccinated against COVID-19 or given that exemption on medical grounds. The Australian Open chief Craig Tilley has been speaking this morning to Nine News in Australia. He said 26 players in all sought exemptions. Not all of them were granted, and he insists there was no special favours for the Serbian nine-time champion at the event. There's been plenty of criticism in Australia in the last 24 hours about that decision to allow Djokovic to travel to Melbourne after they've endured a series of lockdowns in recent months in Victoria.
That was an incredibly smooth news round from Will. Thank you, Will.
Thank you, lads.
Yeah, Colin Buig is joining us next to talk tennis as well. Alluded to there, the Djokovic situation. But first, here's Caitlin Thompson of Racquet Magazine. She spoke to Joe last night about the vaccine exemption received by Djokovic to go to the Aussie Open.
It's difficult for us to fully appreciate the extent to which he is a god in his home country. Mm-hmm. His approval rating is 100%.
That explains a lot, actually, about him and why he... There's a very funny documentary about Metallica starring, obviously, tennis prodigy, famous drummer Lars Ulrich, talking to his dad, who happened to be one of the greatest Danish tennis players of all time and a jazz clarinetist and an artist and all this stuff. And he's listening to one of their albums and he looks at him and he goes, I think you are in, how do you say, like an echo chamber. And I think about that all the time with regards to Novak Djokovic, because this guy is the most famous Serb ever. Yeah. He represents this post-Yugoslav splitting up, children of war, made good redemption story. He's fabulously rich. He's fabulously famous and, you know,
and talented and brilliant.
Clearly and talented and the greatest tennis player. Possibly, at least on the men's side, that we've seen ever in terms of results. He's going to be the president of Serbia if he wants to be, and many, many people think he's going to be. I also think, having spent a little bit of time understanding that region, working on a documentary film about, the mass rapes in Foča, for example, and the Bosniak-Serbian-Croat conflict, they really function well when they feel like they are embattled and embittered and embattled. And I think there's a lot of that mentality that goes on with him, where he thinks, this is me against the world. We have to prove yet again. Nobody wants to believe in us. And here we are, discounted and under underdog, and you guys hate Nadal. You guys hate Djokovic because you love Nadal and Federer. Even if that's not true, even if nobody, you know, everyone has sort of moved on from those folks. And I think there's really a lot to that specific context in which he's operating, where he is a god king, and he's possibly in a bit of an echo chamber because he is not hearing, at least from the kind of agents or PR people who anybody else would say, you know what? Maybe just don't say that out loud. Maybe don't post an Instagram picture about how you got a medical exemption. Maybe don't fan these flames. You know, you don't need to. Your tennis speaks for itself. So just keep winning and shut everybody up that way. But he can't.
Yeah, Jim Dimp on YouTube. Six Nations to be held in the Connacht Dome. That'd be a crack, Nathan.
Yeah, would you hit the roof? Would Johnny Sexton hit the roof? Does remind me of being at the Millennium Stadium around the 2015 World Cup. I was in watching the All Blacks train one day and the skill set of the All Blacks, and Dan Carter was basically trying to hit the roof of the Millennium Stadium, wasn't able to do it. But the task for the props basically was he would kick it to try and hit the roof and they would have to catch the ball, which was quite difficult, but they had no problem doing it.
When you say hit the roof, the noisiest sporting event you've ever been at atmosphere-wise?
Oof. Well, the Millennium Stadium's up there because when the roof is closed, the atmosphere is insane. I have to have a think about that.
Like, we can come back to it.
Big Premier League games, I guess, that, you know, the atmosphere is... I prefer more an intense atmosphere than necessarily a noisy atmosphere.
Okay, yeah. Well, you mentioned...
yours, Johnny? You obviously have something in mind.
I'd honestly say a friendly game, Galatasaray and Fiorentina in Istanbul. Yeah. It was just a friendly game. It was just... this is completely different level. But then again, Galway and Waterford in the All-Ireland final, or any good All-Ireland final, is probably right up there. But we mentioned, we heard about the Serbs there, and obviously thoughts go back to one Serb hitting the ass of another Serb to give Ireland an equalising goal in Lansdowne Road, and good atmosphere that night as well. But one Serb was in the news, and there's a beautiful symmetry to this because Colin Bouygues joins us now. Colin Bouygues is actually in a rush to get through this because he's off to get his booster jab very, very shortly after this little segment of the show, which is about Novak Djokovic, who for whatever reason, Colin, is not doing this but will be going to the Australian Open. Good morning to you,
Johnny. AM Ward, the new Gilroy, how are you? Thanks for revealing my medical private history there.
Yeah, I just consulted with Tommy just to see if it were okay. But I mean, is anyone?
Yeah, you consulted with Tommy.
What's taking you so long?
What?
You literally can't get rid of the boosters.
Well, I have private reasons for that. I find huge sympathy for Novak all of a sudden. I can see it now.
What are your private reasons for waiting so long?
People probing your personal life constantly.
I'll tell you privately, lads. Yeah, wow. We have a great chat.
Jeez, I'm fascinated.
Off the ball, behind the scenes. I really do have to go, though.
You really do have to go, yeah. So we've about 6 minutes. What's going on with Djokovic? Why is he getting an exemption? Is this the rich being favoured over the poor? Talk to me.
Well, you could argue that definitely one side of it, but Craig Thiele, the Tennis Australia chief, has said it's a rigorous, independent panel. There's two panels, and it's full of medical expertise. It's set up in conjunction with the Victorian government, and Djokovic was among 26 others who applied for this medical exemption out of 3,000 players and staff in total that would be participating in the Australian Open. And Djokovic is one of the handful that passed the medical exemption rules, which could be a cardiac illness in the last 3 months. It could be an acute illness overall. It could be a reaction to a previous vaccine. Or probably most interestingly, it could be if you contracted COVID within the last 6 months, then you don't have to get a vaccination and you can play. So
is that not by far and away the most likely scenario here?
It is. And I mean, look, the thing is, this wouldn't even be a segment now if Djokovic just came out and said, look, this is the reason I can play. But he's not going to do that. And it's never been in his nature to really disclose that information. You know, he always holds back a bit. I mean, Djokovic, he's such a polarizing figure and he is a really partisan crowd on his side. Like, look at any comment section on YouTube videos with Djokovic in the title. And there are crazy supporters of Djokovic. You can say no wrong about him. And the one thing about it that I find so fascinating is that for a guy who wants to be loved so much, he goes about it in a very funny way, because he goes up to the field and he's about to go on the pitch and he's like, no, I'll leave it. In that he seems like he's doing everything right to follow the PR of Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. And then just when you say, all right, take it to that extra level, he turns around and goes away and he doesn't, like in this case, disclose the information that everybody wants to hear. And like the reason obviously that everybody, that this is so controversial, is that Melbourne is the most locked down city cumulatively since COVID began. Their cases are skyrocketing at the moment. I'm talking to a friend of mine who lives over there, and he says, like, there's so much anger about this. And for me, like, it was a bit predictable. And I was thinking, what's Djokovic going to do here? Because this is by far his favourite tournament. Like, he's won 20 Grand Slams, 9 of those 20 are in the Australian Open, and he's won the last 3 Australian Opens. And of course, the big thing at the moment is he's tied on 20 with Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer. So he really wants to play at the Australian Open, but he pulled out of the ATP Cup this month with Serbia. That was held in Sydney. And then people are getting, Jesus, I wonder, is he actually not going to play because of this vaccination rule? But I was thinking to myself, if he wants anyway, he's going to play. They're going to let him play. And all, like, this whole thing would end, the whole speculation about it, if they just came out and said, or if he came out and said, look, this is the reason I'm allowed to play.
Well,
but
we're thinking,
do that, and we're never going to know.
We're thinking of Callum Robinson here, but is he going to be absolutely badgered in interviews now? What is it?
Totally, yeah. But do you know what he does? Because he's been badgered about this for 2 years, lads, like, because everybody knows that he's vaccine hesitant, I think is a diplomatic way to put it.
Not our Callum.
And he comes, not like me now, Danny, no. So he'll come out and he'll see what he says. You could say it's kind of smart, but it's the way he puts it anyway, is that he's not against vaccination. He's pro-freedom, pro-choice. And that's the way he's going to spin this. So I think what he'll do, like, it's a week and a half to go, lads, so this Australian Open starts, a long way to go. I think what he'll do is he'll say, look, it's I'm pro-choice, you know, whatever people want to do. And I applied for a medical exemption. I got a medical exemption. I don't have to disclose my medical history, which he's absolutely right in doing. He doesn't want to go on with you, Danny, but he's absolutely right in saying that he doesn't have to say any of this. So we're never going to know the reasons for this. The only way that this will escalate further is that the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has come out and said, look, Djokovic has to prove why he's not being vaccinated.
Mm.
And he might do that, and we may never know about it. Or on the other side, the most extreme measure taken here is that Djokovic could be kicked back out of the country if he can't sufficiently prove why he has received this exemption. And I don't think that's going to happen, because the other point about this too is last year there was a 5-day circuit breaker midway through the Australian Open because there was a case at a Holiday Inn in Melbourne. So there was no fans allowed for 5 days, which means all those ticket sales were gone and all those merchandise sales were gone. Could argue that the Australian Open really needs the money and Novak Djokovic is the biggest draw. So that's why he's allowed to play. But look,
is he not a negative draw?
No, like, there's a huge Serbian population in Melbourne that absolutely love him. Like, he, you know, I remember in his first round match last year, his on-court post-match interview, and an Australian interviewer asked him, oh, you got a bit frustrated there before this tournament, because he did something similar last year in terms of, he was very vocal about being against the quarantine restrictions that players had to isolate for 14 days if they're on a flight. If they're one of 72 players on 3 flights that have positive cases, they had to quarantine for 14 days. And Djokovic was saying, you know, can you not let them out and play a bit of tennis and coach and have better food and all that? And the interviewer kind of alluded to that in the post-match interview on court. And Djokovic was like, what do you mean frustrated? And then the crowd started booing the interviewer because he has such a huge Serbian contingent in the crowd with him. So as many people that kind of dislike him or are opposed to his views, there are a lot of fans who absolutely worship the ground that Djokovic walks on. And that'll be the case in Australia too.
Yeah, briefly, we talked about raising the roof there in a literal sense. So you'd imagine that the atmosphere could be really, really good at this between obviously the Serbian expats, I guess, back in Djokovic, and a lot of people who generally don't like him anyway.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that's always been the draw with Djokovic. And, you know, for a guy who really wants to be, as well as being, you know, potentially the best player of all time, also the most loved player of all time. And I even know it's the old adage, like, if you're trying that hard to be loved, it's never going to happen. And therefore, he polarizes so many people. And that's kind of the way his personality is anyway. So, like, the fact that he is playing, or it certainly looks like he's playing now as we speak today, that's just going to draw more people to it, isn't it? Because the first round match, people are going to tune in to hear what the crowd's reaction is going to be like. And also, there's players saying, like Jamie Murray said yesterday, you know, if it was me applying for an exemption, I don't think I would have got it. And then Alex de Minaur, who's one of the top-ranked Australian players, described the unfolding events as quote-unquote interesting. So I'm sure there's a lot of players who don't like this. So it, and
it's
I looked
have to
at lads,
come out, isn't this?
I think so. Well, I don't think so, Nate. We want it to come out. It doesn't have to come out.
I think it's in the interest of the Australian government that this will have to come out, whether it's officially released or whether it leaks out, because people don't care about Novak Djokovic in Australia coming and playing the Australian. It's not a case of, thank God that the best player of all time is coming to grace us with his presence. Yes, the Serbian community might be delighted to see him, but most people look at themselves selfishly and think, I've sacrificed an awful lot. We've been knocked down more than anybody else in the world. And we're making exemption for somebody who's one of the most vocal anti-vaxxers in the world to come to this country. Like, they'll want to know why that has happened.
Well, look, that's what's already happened in the ensuing 24 hours since the story broke, is that the officials are basically pushing Djokovic to come out and say, you know, the reason he's got the exemption. And it is on him. He's the only person who's going to say it. And I don't think that's going to happen. But like, for me, look, this is why we need a drive to survive for tennis. Mm. This is why Wataraq estimation point needs to be commissioned, because can you imagine the whispers behind the scenes at the moment between the players and staff? It's, you know, 100% the talking point of tennis. And tennis does itself no favours a lot of the time in attracting new audiences. But even though this is a negative story, this has piqued the interest of a lot of people, tennis fan or otherwise.
Thanks a million for your time. Best of luck with the booster jab this morning.
Thanks a million, Daddy. Thank you.
That was Colin Buhig. OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, Star with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. And here is what's coming up on OTB Sports Radio today. 1 p.m. OTB Gold with Dr. Harry Edwards on OJ. 3 p.m. Giles All-Time Spurs 11. Retro panel at 4. Gambling and Addiction. 6 p.m. OTB Gold with Catherine Switzer. Up next this morning on OTBAM, it's the nutritionist Daniel Davey. Do stay with us.
OTB AM.
You're watching OTB AM, the sports breakfast show from Off the Ball. And good morning to you if you are watching and listening in. Right now, we're delighted to welcome Daniel Davey, founder of DaveyNutrition.com, to chat to us about how you should be fueling your body while exercising. A lot of people, Daniel, will be probably watching this in the laptop, munching into their substandard cereal or whatever it is. Not you, I doubt it.
No, I'd say most people now are sort of back on track. It's been not your conventional type of Christmas. But I'd expect that people are on their porridge and granola this morning.
It's hard to believe how recently it is that, you know, diet wasn't that big of a deal in sport. You advised Leinster and Dublin GAA. Nowadays, obviously, it's everything. But what would you advise the guy who, or the girl who's just trying to get into a good routine in January in terms of a new fitness regime, what are the pointers that you would give him or her?
Well, I think it points to what brings about success in no matter what you're doing. And it's like, you need to have good clarity. It's not, you know, we're going to go on a big push now in January with something that's probably unrealistic to sustain. So, you know, success comes around having a good idea of what your priorities are and then working towards that. And I suppose that's what I've been fortunate enough to be exposed to, is that you shouldn't be afraid of making small steps, because that's what we need to do.
Nathan, what are your New Year's resolutions on the food front?
Oh, well, you're probably talking, Daniel, to two people here who are on slightly different ends of the scale when it comes to fitness and looking after themselves, in the prime athlete in Johnny Ward and myself at the other end of 40. What I like about you following me on Instagram, Daniel, is like, you obviously talk about building healthy habits, and you mentioned there about building something sustainable. I'm wondering, though, for somebody like in my position who is thinking, actually, I do need a significant change. Like, how do you go about that? Like, do you still think, actually, if you're not dealing with a Dublin footballer or a Leinster rugby player, for somebody who's thinking, actually, I need to make a significant change to whether it's my fitness regime or my eating habits, like, that you should go all out in January and, you know, do a dry January, change your diet completely, and then sort of ease off it slightly to something more sustainable then?
It's an interesting way of looking at it. But no matter how big the goal is, you still need to break it down. So, whether it be an exercise goal or whether it be sleep or whether it be nutrition, if you want to achieve something but then sustain that success, and I think that's the point that a lot of people miss, it's like, you have to build the skills and the knowledge and the practice up over the course of time, so that when you do get up there, you know, to where you're looking to sustain or that you're happy with. You've built the skills along the way. So there's an awful lot of cliches when you're approaching a goal, and it's the same in exercise too. But if you try and do something overly extreme, there is a kind of a metabolic, or there is a kind of an alarm system in the brain and in the head going, geez, what's going on here? Hang on a second. We've had a good December. We've had a good lead into Christmas. And now you're trying to restrict us from a calorie perspective. There's a big change in energy output. And that's why it's difficult to sustain that success. So one or two things at a time. And I've done this, I've even mentioned some of this week on, if you're looking to drop some body fat, it's body fat, not weight. So, you know, making sure that you've got adequate energy, adequate protein, and that you're targeting about a pound a week, or a little bit more if you feel that you've got the skills in place to do it.
And you can eat perfectly healthy without like having bland meals as well. I think that's a point that needs to be made here, isn't it? That there's a lot of really healthy food out there, a lot of food maybe that you haven't tried that is actually very, very good for you, particularly compatible with the athlete that might be in you in January.
There's no question. And I suppose that's why I place so much emphasis on cooking. If you don't have the skills to prepare something that's tasty, or you don't have the things that are in the cupboard, it's very difficult to make very tasty meals. And you know, when I started working in elite sport, a lot of the focus was on, you know, what restaurants or what menus would you recommend, or where can we get easy, convenience meals to prep. Whereas if you learn a new skill, or you learn a couple of new, very simple recipes that are tasty, that you enjoy, that you can go to, makes your life an awful lot easier.
Check out davinutrition.com for more information, where you get various plans to achieve goals like performance, muscle building, fat loss and health improvements. You taking all this in, Nathan? The aim is to translate the science of nutrition into practical information like recipes, articles and meal guides on the website www.davinutrition.com. Davey's going to give
us my resolution for 2022 was to start in a positive manner, and I'm just getting beaten down this morning.
What was your dinner last night?
I'll be perfectly honest, I follow Daniel on Instagram, so I watch the sort of things he's cooking. My general three meals a day are very healthy. My problem, Daniel, is the snacking. And maybe that's something I should focus on, of actually making myself some healthy snacks, particularly I find since I'm working from home. Where at first I thought actually not being able to go out to the shop and things like that, but I find, I don't know, you have a bit more time hanging around the house, you're just wandering around the kitchen, you're picking something up. So my three meals, my breakfast, my lunch, my dinner are perfectly fine, perfectly healthy, all home cooked, all of that. It's the bits in between that are killing me.
That's a very good point, Sir Daniel, because the panacea that is working from home for a lot of people actually has a lot of pitfalls, and Nathan just mentions one of them there.
Absolutely. And it's funny, because we're working at home, there are certain habits that become better. We've got greater opportunity to move and things like that. But then we're much closer to the kitchen. And that's a challenge. But I would go back, first of all, to your three meals. I don't doubt that they're healthy, but making sure there's a good source of protein at each one, and particularly at breakfast, is absolutely critical. So I would have noticed exactly what you're talking about myself. It's very easy to overconsume on snacks like nuts. And I mean, I'm a devil for dark chocolate, and you know, even drinking calories is, you know, you decide to have a coffee and you want to have something with it. So first of all, make sure that the three meals you're having is a good source of protein. That'll help to manage your appetite. And then having clear structure about when your snack is. So if you say my snack is at this specific time, whether it be 11 o'clock or after my exercise, whatever, that really helps to go, this is what my structure is at home, because that's what your work environment brings. If you go into work, you're going to work, you're in the environment, you're committed to your whatever your meetings are, you're at your desk. It's creating that work environment. One of the best things that I did was actually set aside a space that, you know, that you're working in, and that becomes your workspace, and you don't bring food into that, as an example.
Yeah, and an awful lot of people, even when they were like working at their office, they ate at their desk at lunchtime, which is, we've a bizarre attitude to food in this country at times, where food should be a massive, massive part of your day. It's very enjoyable, and some people rush through, they don't even have time to make a proper dinner. If we have 3 to 5 go-to meals, Daniel, give us 3 to 5 go-to meals that'll will bring us on the path to glory when it comes to food?
Well, I don't know, can you see this? But I made an overnight oats.
Oh, look at this. Night. Got a bit of kiwi going on in there.
Bit of kiwi. I wouldn't normally, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be great on presentation.
You're just showing off.
Yeah.
Does
this count as a snack?
Yes. And the other one is actually very similar. So this one was an overnight oats, and the other one is like a little chia pudding, and that's a good high protein snack. You've got a little bit of chia seeds, and you've got a bit of whey and yogurt in there. And going back to the snack point, very often if snacks are like your typical granola bars, or you're just having a slice of bread with something, it's or a sandwich, again, the protein is quite low in there, so it's, you're not getting that kind of appetite management. But an overnight oats, a protein pudding, the other ones that I've down are something that's egg based is great. Mm. Like a frittata or baked eggs, very simple. And then what I like is if you can get used to making one good fish dish a week, because we don't
we eat nowhere near enough fish in this country. We're an island nation. We export like 99% of our fish or something ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think going back to, you know, what you're setting your goals or have clarity on what you're going to do with your meals, if you can have a couple of days. I mean, we used to have like Fish Friday and things like that
back in the old good Catholic days in this country.
Yeah, but if you can set a day and say, you know what, so for me, I always like to start off my Monday with a fish dish, and that can be something like a fish pie, or it can be a simple pasta baked with salmon in it. These are very, very easy to make, and they work great for lunch the next day. And then the other one, like a curry, you can't go wrong with a curry, and it gets better and better as the week goes on.
Absolutely agree with you there, 100%. Neddy No-Nos, what should we not be eating?
Well, do you know what? When I was thinking about no-nos, I actually changed it to not what we shouldn't be eating, because it's more about the portion of anything. So the dose defines the poison when it comes to any food. It's the same with alcohol, as we well know. But what I thought would be more useful is how you would approach the year. And I think one of the big no-nos or mistakes that people can make is not having something on paper. You know, putting something down and having a date on it and having clarity around, right, what's my priority? You know, is it a breakfast? Is it a snack? And just to give you a tiny, tiny, tiny example, I was working with a guy last year, and, you know, there was some people put on weight and some people lost weight throughout COVID. This guy lost 4 kilos, right, over a very short space. Well, when I say short space of time, it was 3 months. But what he realized was lunch was a big issue for him. Mm. So you mentioned about your three good meals. But what he wasn't getting right was what he wasn't prepping lunch. He didn't have a facility to get a good meal at work. Now, what happened was very often he wasn't having enough calories, enough energy at lunchtime. And he's coming home. And what was he doing? He was straight to the fridge. He had a block of cheese melted on a toasty before he even had his
dinner. Nathan's like, this man is my hero.
No.
Nathan, you're jotting down notes frantically over there in the corner.
Absolutely. This is a free hit here. This is exactly what I need to start the year.
Well, putting something on paper is so the next thing, don't be, have your goals, but don't be overly ambitious. Don't taking on something that's like, I'll give you an example. People go crazy tracking all of their food on, you know, apps and things like that. You don't need to do that. No harm to review what you're doing, but don't go obsessively tracking everything. You're not going to be obsessively tracking in 3 months, 6 months, and 8 months, or next year. So don't do anything that is not unrealistic.
Our producer, Tommy Rooney, is frantically writing down almost everything you're saying here, Daniel. So it's definitely registering with him. And he's a couple of points here. 5 things you should have in your press. I like this one.
Okay, well, that's a very easy one. And I would say, there's lots, but when I went to the cupboards this morning, there's always oats, there's always nuts, there's always yogurt, eggs, there's always beans. If you want a quick beans on toast or something like that.
Just your bog standard beans.
Bog standard beans. You can always do a baked eggs with beans. I mean, a great lunch option. And this time of year, frozen veg or frozen fruit. People kind of ask me about that a lot. there's no excuse for not having some frozen fruit or frozen veg in your, you can make a smoothie bowl, you can make smoothies, you can make something quick like that. You can even make stuff for on top of your porridge, like a compote or something like that. And then frozen peas, frozen veg, very simple.
Ideally, do you fast before you sleep effectively? So eat as early as possible as your last meal.
You know what? I knew this was going to come up and I had it down here as well.
That literally just came into my head. So it's purely by the grace of God, the God that we mentioned earlier on Fridays with fish.
Yeah. So look, there's so many people. I mean, the fasting is a fascinating space, and meal timing is really fascinating because there are pros to it in the right context, with the right education, with the right skills. But a 12-12 approach is a really, really simple way to go about it. So fasting for 12 hours and eating within a 12-hour window. And that simply means that if you're going to bed at 10 o'clock, your last meal is about 8 o'clock. You know, if you're up in the morning, having your breakfast around 8, that's absolutely fine. But we want to do something that, you know, we're excited about and we want to talk about. So things like intermittent fasting and 16-8 are a lot more attractive to do. But if you apply 12-12, you get the same results.
Nathan.
Daniel, it's 9:18 on the 5th of January. I'm looking for a get out. What's your thoughts on dry January?
Well, I always like the question, what do you do yourself? Now, last weekend or over Christmas, I wouldn't be recommending to do what I do, but I'm not big on anything that's overly restrictive. Now, I will say that it's no harm to give the system a break if you've had a big December. Certainly no harm to go off it for a month or 6 weeks. But if you're a moderate drinker, you know, you enjoy a drink on a Friday and a Saturday night, and it isn't excessive. You know, you're not drinking a bottle of wine Friday and Saturday night, or you're having an odd drink, then there's no reason why you have to have a dry January. But having said that, if, like a lot of people, you've excessively consumed alcohol, it's no harm giving yourself a bit of a break.
Yeah, on a WhatsApp group with a erstwhile colleague who's regularly off the ball, told him I was on dry January. He said, dry January, honestly, in a pandemic, the futility of it all. To which another colleague replied, all good, my end. I've never done dry January. Very against it.
Yeah,
it's the best time of year to go to all the best boozers. There you go, Nate.
Well, if you could go to them. Daniel, Johnny mentioned that our producer Tommy taking notes there, and Tommy's one of these lads, mid-20s, you know, keen club footballer. And I do get the sense that generation are very aware of their nutrition and of their body image and keeping themselves in shape. You obviously do a lot of work with, you know, Dublin GA and have worked with Leinster Rugby. Is that your sense that generation, the sort of 20-somethings, the more millennial types, are a lot better educated around all this than, say, myself and Johnny's age group were?
I think there's a real growing awareness that if you want to achieve something, you know, in performance related, even if you're a high performer in your job, recreational athlete, or you're a competitive athlete, you can't achieve your potential if you're not getting your diet right. I mean, that has been accepted. And I think that principle is probably widely understood now than it was before. I mean, when I was playing football, I was the odd one out that was paying real attention to this. And there was this idea that if you're training hard enough and you're exercising regularly enough, then, you know, the diet will look after itself, which we now accept and know that it's just not the case. So there is now I will say, from a health perspective, so in the broader population, there's a major divide. So there's people becoming obsessive or really, really into the nutrition, there's still a lot of people being left behind.
And we all pine for simple answers. As simple as the answer can be here, how much of it, if people are like, and a lot of people are trying to lose weight at the moment and they're going into dry January or they're going into fitness January and blah, 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 blah. What percentage is nutrition? What percentage is exercise?
I'll put it this way. And this is probably a very simple and tangible way to look at it. Exercise accounts for quite a small percentage of the calories that we burn in any given day. So if you're looking to improve your body composition, it's next to impossible to do it through exercise alone. And in fact, research has proven that if you don't have a good nutrition strategy alongside your movement and your exercise, then you're destined not to succeed or certainly not sustain that fat loss. So you got to put the two of them together, and nutrition, I mean, it's fundamental. It's very difficult to put a percentage on it because it's absolutely different for everybody.
Well, you'll see a lot of people as well, like, who are, they're very, very heavy in the gym. They eat a lot of eggs, as you mentioned, a lot of red meat as well. Where do you come in on that? I've seen it mentioned again, even I think at EU level, where basically they're kind of, experts are warning against excess red meat. We're massive fans of beef in this country. What's your take on that?
Okay, so I'm a farmer from the west of Ireland, so I have to be always very careful.
The west is best this morning anyway, in OTB AM, yeah.
Not pissing off the farmers. So firstly, red meat can still fit into the diet. Are we overly reliant on red meat? In some cases, but it's more so processed meat we have to watch out for. So it's more so our hams, our processed hams, processed meats. So once, this is a really important point that's often not kind of emphasized. There's a protective effect if you're eating lots and lots of vegetables too. So if you're accompanying your meals, whether it be a bolognese or whether it be a lasagna or whatever, and there's loads of vegetables in there, that's a positive thing. But can we eat more varied food? Can we eat more fish? Can we eat more maybe vegetarian meals? We can, and we do need to adjust and do that. But I would say supporting local, getting Irish produce, Irish meat, and then getting the veg in with it is important.
I couldn't believe that recently, reading about like Irish prawns, 95% of them are exported because they're actually quite valued. And the prawns that we eat that look fresh and we buy even from reasonable places, they're coming from Argentina. I mean, it's wrong on so many levels. So we're exporting like so much of our fish, we're exporting. And like, I guess I'm going off a bit of a rant here, but we should be buying stuff that's grown in this country because we actually export more than we eat ourselves.
There's no question. And I, you know, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. When I go down to the local fishmonger, I go into the butcher and you see the prices, like,
but they're only prices relative to what's cheap, which shouldn't be cheap in the first place.
I know. Believe me, you're preaching to the converted, but it is, if more people bought local, then it would actually improve the prices. So we drive down, consumers drive down the price of food all the time. We want cheaper and cheaper food. Whereas there is a very, very simple rule, broadly speaking, when it comes to food, and that is, if you invest in it, you get it back in your health, but you also get it back in the quality that you're consuming.
Totally, totally. And if you had one last piece of advice for Nathan, myself, and anyone who wants to essentially eat healthier in 2022.
Not what you're going to expect. The biggest influencer when it comes to success of a lot of goals is actually not to do it alone, to actually have this conversation with somebody. And if you are going to go after a nutrition or an exercise or some different thing, that you actually go, right, we'll go in on this. You know when you're a part of a team or you're in a WhatsApp group or you're part of something, the chances of you sustaining that, or even if it's with your friend or your partner, your wife or whatever it might be, the chances of sustaining it and being successful are much, much higher.
Will you ever see Mayo win All Ireland?
He's a Sligo man.
I'm a Sligo man. We find it very difficult to. No. I don't know what. A lot of respect for Mayo, but I can't say I'm going to jump on their bandwagon.
Yeah, it's strange, Nathan, because as much as we all kind of pine for Mayo, like just ending the famine, a lot of people in Connacht don't really seem to want it to happen either.
If you saw the abuse that poor us Sligo people get when we're bet out the gate by Mayo, it's very hard.
Johnny, you're making the mistake that us Mayo people care what Galway people think about us, which I can assure you we absolutely do not. What we need to do is get
Tarny subject.
Yeah. What we need to do is, because Dan's been working with the Dubs, like, he's you know, the man feeding the greatest team we have ever seen, and he's going all the way from Sligo up to Dublin.
Is there a cooler accent in Ireland than the Sligo accent? It's just that nice, cushioned west of Ireland, Atlantic coast. We're outward looking, we're inward looking, we're cool people.
Never heard that before, not once.
Daniel, lovely to have you on.
Great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Check out davynutrition.com for more information, where Dan and his team has various plans for you to achieve goals like performance, muscle building, fat loss and health improvements. The aim is to translate the science of nutrition into practical information like recipes, articles and meal guides on the website www.davynutrition.com. Just channeling my inner Darina Allen there, Nathan.
You like your cooking, Johnny, do you?
I absolutely love cooking. It's one of the things I can't get my head around this country, and in general in the Western world, how people are so obsessed with work that they don't seem to find the time, even an hour in the day or half an hour in the day. And I realise with kids it might be difficult, but like eating a good meal and an enjoyable meal is one of the pleasures of life. It's one of the true pleasures of life. Not being online, not being on your phone, not like necessarily putting 10 pints of Guinness into you. It's eating a nice meal, can be healthy. First thing in the morning, have poached eggs, like have, you know, what Dan was showing there, the all those beautiful fruits and, you know, just healthy food. And then put some time into it. Make your dinner, and don't eat watching TV preferably as well. You know, food and your dinner and all of that, it's been like since time immemorial, it's been such an important part of our day. And I feel that, and also as he mentioned, it wrecks my head how much food we export and how much we import to eat in this country, when we basically should be self-sufficient apart from, you know, avocados and lemon, basically.
It's the Johnny Ward manifesto for the new year. Try enjoying your cooking when you've got three kids, Johnny.
I'm conscious of that.
I absolutely loved cooking, but now when it's a needs must and they're looking at what you've put in front of them with disdain, can be quite frustrating.
What are your... I think we've like 2 minutes to get through here, so it's just Johnny and Nathan time here. Coach Murphy and
are we on dry January together? This is what Daniel was saying. Need somebody
like we're in the middle of the desert when the drugs start to take hold. We're in the middle of like the 5th of January when dry January starts to take hold. I was like, hang on a sec, it's only the 5th here, and I'm like,
There's 5 weekends in this January.
That's a tough one.
Mean anything anymore?
That is a tough one. You can probably guess who our colleague is who was dissing my dry January ambitions. And let's be honest, usually you don't get through it. But there's no point having a dream, Nathan. There's nothing wrong with having a dream.
No, at all. And listen, if we get through this weekend, Johnny, we'll be doing well.
That's just not a good attitude at all. It's not a good attitude at all.
So if I'm here, if I ever get invited around to Johnny Ward's house, if for once it's the Ward feeding the Murphys rather than the other way around, what's Johnny serving up?
Last night I had mussels, which I hadn't actually cooked before. Often it'll be steak. I love curries. I love cooking food.
I have a
fear
of cooking fish. I'm not a big fish fan. Which
Why?
I've just never liked it since I was a kid. I do love prawns, but I have a fear of cooking prawns for some reason.
You have a fear of cooking prawns? Why?
That I'm not going to cook them enough. And I know it's almost impossible not to cook prawns enough.
Like fish is like, I think mussels probably aren't bought because people think it's hassle. Like they literally take about 3 or 4 minutes to cook. It couldn't be more straightforward.
To put a bit of sauce with them?
A bit of wine and cream, parmesan, garlic, onions. I mean, this is very, very basic.
Back up a second. So you had the bottle of white wine open.
Yes.
Put in with the mussels. And did you fill yourself a glass?
No, I'm on dry January, okay. Nathan. But yeah, just before, obviously before we go, I'm not sure if we're on again this week. What are your sporting hopes for 2022? Will Mayo finally win the All-Ireland? Tell me.
I think Mayo go close. Once again, I'd never guarantee that Mayo would win an All-Ireland. Listen, my sporting hopes are the same as everybody, that, you know, we have full stadiums, that we can go to matches whenever we want to go to matches, and that we don't have any more lockdowns or anything like that. I find I can enjoy pretty much any sport, any match, regardless of the result, regardless of who's playing. Get back, maybe going commentating on Premier League games again, actually at the grounds, would be a nice thing to do at some stage this year. I thought we'd be back long since back by now. Maybe get to the World Cup.
Maybe so. And the Shamrock Rovers under-8s are all right.
But listen, here, we were taught a lesson, but you know, Let's meet them again in a year's time, Johnny. Once we've Johnny Ward up for the motivational speech, and maybe you can put them on a sort of nutritional plan as well.
If there's one thing
Dan McDonald's on with you tomorrow morning. Dan McDonald's on with you tomorrow morning. He says we're going for pints on Saturday.
Actually, if there's one
thing, gonna be home by 8 though, so it's fine.
If there's one thing an under-8 team needs, it's a motivational speech before. You know all about it next year when you're playing under-9. Nathan, it's been great having you on.
Cheers, Johnny.
OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Join us tomorrow morning from 7:30 a.m. This is a special one. Me and Dan McDonald with Dean Kiley, who is one of these fascinate members of the Irish backroom team, who's obviously just these riches all over the place in terms of the Irish goalkeeping situation at the moment. And as the third part of our Off the Couch series to launch the new year, Robbie Cannon, Shane Lowry's S&C coach, joins us. So we've had that series this week. I think it's been very interesting. We hope you've enjoyed it as well. Jessica yesterday, obviously Daniel this morning, and tomorrow we'll talk to Robbie.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.